Hey ladies, Scott Horton here. If you would like truly youthful, healthy, and healthy-looking skin, there is one very special company you need to visit. Dagny & Lane at dagnyandlane.com. Dagny & Lane has revolutionized the industry with a full line of products made from organic and all-natural ingredients that penetrate deeply with nutrient-rich ionic minerals and antioxidants for healthy and beautiful skin. That's Dagny & Lane at dagnyandlane.com. And for a limited time, add promo code SCOTT15 at checkout for a 15% discount.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here. After the show, you should check out one of my sponsors, WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by Mike Swanson, a former hedge fund manager who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Mike's site, WallStreetWindow.com, is unique in that he shows people what he's really investing in, updating you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike's betting his positions are going to go up due to the Federal Reserve printing all that money to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. In an empire where Congress knows nothing, the ubiquitous DC think tank is all. And the Israel lobby and their neocon allies must own a dozen. Well, Americans have a lobby in Washington, too. It's called the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. They advocate for us on Capitol Hill. Join CNI to demand an end to the U.S.-sponsored occupation of the Palestinians and an end to our government's destructive empire in the Middle East. That's the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Our next guest is Adam Morrow from Interpress Service. That's ipsnews.net. So, how are things?
Things right now seem to have settled down. As you probably know, this weekend saw some sort of limited clashes in Tahrir Square again, between supporters of the president and opponents of the president. Although exact circumstances remain vague and it's not entirely certain who was behind it. But there's a lot to suggest that there might be people who are sort of claiming to be supporters of the president, but actually turns out not to be the case. So it's sort of uncertain what exactly happened, but the mainstream Islamist groups have all sort of, you know, distanced themselves from what happened. So it remains, as usual, as in the aftermath of all of these things, it sort of remains unusual who exactly was responsible for triggering the violence.
All right, now, even without knowing exactly, you know, who's leading which group or whatever, can you tell us what it was that they were, you know, fighting about? Was there substance to any of this, or just give us power, not them?
Sure. Well, apparently, the new Islamist president, Mohamed Morsi, made a move to replace a Mubarak era prosecutor general, and that triggered this sort of conflict or this dispute between the presidency and the judiciary. Now, because the Constitution is still in the process of being written, a lot of these powers are still uncertain, you know, as to, you know, who has power over how these different branches of government interact and what their relative powers are is still very ambiguous. So that led to a conflict, which eventually led to the president backing down and the prosecutor general staying on. Now, what happened after that was two twin protests were both called for Tahrir Square. One of them in support of the president, and a second one organized by opponents of the president. On Friday morning, by Friday afternoon, there were clashes reported between the two sides. But from what I understand, the Islamist groups, primarily the Muslim Brotherhood and the big Salafist parties, had both issued directives, both of which, by the way, are very eager to avoid clashes. They don't want to rock the boat right now. They're trying to basically consolidate their power after their electoral victory in parliament and for the presidency. So the last thing that they want is clashes. So it seems very strange to me that they would actually be promoting or instigating instigating violence with their opponent, with their political opponents. So what it looks like is that early on, when they sort of realized that, you know, that this, that these twin rallies were gonna result in violent confrontations between the two sides, they issued directives to their followers to withdraw and to stay away. But then you still did have people that were there. You still did have people that were there, at least claiming to be supporters of the president, who were fighting with and attacking the other, you know, the other demonstrators.
Well,
so
you know,
again, as usual, unfortunately, we're left with these conflicting reports, and it's you know, in the aftermath of all of these things, that you're always left with a high degree of uncertainty as to who exactly is behind it. But what's for sure,
well,
in
maybe,
my opinion,
maybe
anyway,
nobody, right? You can have just some people in a crowd of protesters screaming at each other, and they're not necessarily being directed by anyone other than their own retarded emotions, you know?
That's true, but I do think there's been a lot of evidence over the last couple of months, in the 18 months or more now since the revolution, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that there are groups out there that might be, they might be loyal to the old regime, they might be indirectly in the employ of foreign powers, but there are definitely groups out there that are actively trying to sow chaos and to sort of, you know, to just sort of promote general instability, whether that be in the form of labor strikes or whether that's in the, for example, what we saw outside the embassy. I can't remember if we spoke in the wake of the embassy thing. I don't think we did, but that was a very good example and very similar to what happened recently, where you basically have something happen, you know, you basically had like the appearance of this movie that basically enraged everybody because it mocked Islam and Muhammad. And that got people out on the streets. Now the original plan was for a peaceful, entirely peaceful demonstration. But what happens is in most cases you seem to get these hot-headed instigators who get in there. These aren't Muslim Brotherhood people, they're not Salafist people. They're just these, you know, random youth, you know, and they don't look Islamist either. You can look Islamists by what they're wearing, by their beard. These are younger guys, you know, jeans and t-shirt types that are in there. Some of them say that they're young guys who might have tangled with the police in past demonstrations and just sort of have scores to settle with the security agencies. Some of them are just, you know, young hotheads who just want to get a piece of the action, you know, who just want to hit the streets just for the thrill of hitting the streets. And I think these groups, these young guys are very easily manipulated. And I think there are powers behind them that are sort of pushing them to or instigating this sort of violence.
So we can rewind just a little bit. Basically, Adam, what you were saying was the recent clash in Tahrir Square that at least, nominally appeared to be between young liberal anti-regime types and regime supporters could well have been somebody else, could have just been local 17-year-olds being 17-year-olds, could have been
higher
any number
folks
of groups who want to make it look like there's something for the Muslim Brotherhood and the liberals to fight about in order to perhaps preempt some deal they might make at some point in the future, or God knows what, right? There's 100 different people playing this game of Chinese checkers here.
Right, exactly. Well, it's not 100 different people. It's more like two general forces that you can, you know, you've got the Islamist forces on one side, and then you've got the sort of former regime forces on the other side. That's how you can sort of very broadly break down the sort of political climate in the country. Now you do have a lot of liberals and leftists and these sort of groups and trends, but they don't represent much of the public. I mean, you're only talking about 10% probably or less of the entire Egyptian public. So they're not as representative of one as one might think reading the Western press, where you think half of Egypt are secular liberals and that sort of thing. No, they're actually much smaller than that. So you have these two overriding forces, and again, that's the sort of Islamist side, and then you've got the former regime side, which was epitomized by Ahmed Shafiq, if you remember. He was the guy that Morsi beat in the last presidential elections. Mm-hmm. And then you have what appears to be like this, what looks like it's some kind of third party that's constantly being referred to here as a third party or a hidden hand. That seems to be constantly trying to set fires, however it can, be it instigating violence. But one of the tricks that they use is instigating a sectarian strife between Egypt's Coptic Christian minority and the Muslim majority, neither of whom have any interest in fighting one another and who have lived together peacefully for centuries. And all of a sudden you've got these very strange sectarian clashes suddenly breaking out where a church will be burnt by a mob of guys who are never later identified. And this will ignite the entire country will explode because of this particular incident, the perpetrators of which are never brought to book. So it's very easy. Also, bear in mind also, the climate here is has been so emotionally charged, especially since the revolution. Emotions are running very high. I think in Arab culture in general, there people tend to resort to emotionalism very quickly. So it's very easy to sort of set the public on fire. It's very easy to rile up the public and get them and sort of get two sides angry at one another. If you manage to a little bit of well placed sabotage at the right time can really set things on fire. So I think there's a lot of that going on. There's definitely hidden hands at work trying to cause problems right now for Egypt's new Islamist administration. I think that's safe to say.
Mm-hmm. All right, now. Always. Where's the CIA in this? Are they just desperately trying to make friends again with the Muslim Brotherhood because that's the best they can do? Or are they working to unseat them? Both?
Well, this is one of the things that the critics of the Muslim Brotherhood have been charging for the past couple of months. After they realized that it was impossible to stop their electoral advance, their next move was to basically accuse them of being in bed with the United States, which I find a little hard to swallow, given the traditional American antipathy towards Islamist movements and Islamist governments and that sort of thing in the region.
Well, but so no, I find that's that a only a new thing, and we're taking it back. we're fighting for the Islamists in Libya and in Syria right now, and the Sunni ones.
Right.
But yeah, no, I think we talked before about that there's this great book by Robert Dreyfus from The Nation, called Devil's Game, How the United States Helped to Unleash Fundamentalist Islam, about how the CIA found a good partner, a willing partner in the Muslim Brotherhood back during the Cold War because as right-wing religious types, they were opposed to the nationalists and the socialists. And so
right.
They were great. Same reason that Israel preferred and created Hamas to counter the PLO.
Right, right. Well, I'll tell you this. One very interesting thing to look at is Egypt's position or Morsi's stated position on the Syria crisis, because there's definitely two sides of the crisis in Syria right now. I mean, what I believe is being portrayed in the Western media as this popular uprising by these downtrodden Syrians who just want their freedom. I don't think that's the case at all. I think it might have been that way in the very beginning. There might have been a small minority, a small activist community that might have been staging anti-Assad demonstrations and that sort of thing. But what you have now in Syria is definitely an armed insurrection, a heavily armed insurrection that's being heavily supported by the U.S., by extension Israel, certainly being supported by Turkey. I hear it's being supported by Jordan, and Qatar and Saudi Arabia also are both supporting it. So this is basically a regime change operation that you have going on in Syria. Mm-hmm. That's being portrayed both in the Western media and the Arabic language media as a popular uprising along the same lines as what we saw in Egypt and Tunisia, which is absolutely not the case because, I mean, Egypt really was an entirely peaceful, entirely unarmed popular movement.
Although,
on the same thing can be said for Tunis for the most part.
Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt would be for what's happening in Syria. At least they wouldn't be too badly against it because the Muslim Brotherhood stand to be the biggest beneficiaries, right?
Exactly. So that's quite an interesting development. I had been waiting to see what position were the Brotherhood. I'm quite sympathetic to the Brotherhood. I make no secret to the fact that I think they are the best. I think they're the most qualified group to run the country right now, because nobody else has the sort of organizational capacities that they do. People might disagree with some of their stands on certain issues when it comes to civil liberties and some smaller things like this. But ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, there's really no alternative to them, in order to Egypt right now needs administration more than anything else. And it's a massive country of 80 million people. So it really needs, some kind of group or power with strong organizational capacities, and no one has that except the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, and it was so obvious from the beginning, too,
with the group. That being said, I was taken aback by their by Morsi's latest position on stated position on Syria, which he articulated. I think he articulated for the first time about a month ago when he went to the non-aligned movement summit in Tehran, and then I think he reiterated it again at the United Nations General Assembly meeting last month. So I was quite surprised that he came out strongly in support of the Syrian revolution, which, like I said, seems to be some kind of, I know the Americans certainly support it. So you are seeing sort of a confluence now of interest between the Muslim Brotherhood here and American foreign policy interests, at least in terms of Syria. And it's also interesting because there was some talk that, the election of an Islamist president here would eventually usher in renewed relations with Iran, which Egypt-Iran relations have been frozen since 1979. So there's been a lot of talk that, as soon as the Brotherhood came to power, it would resume diplomatic relations with Tehran. That hasn't happened, and it looks like it's actually not going to happen in the immediate future. And a big part of that is because of Egypt's stated position on Syria, which is for the revolution, for the insurgency there. Yeah. Whereas, Syria represents one of Iran's sole allies in the region. If you take Syria out of the equation, Iran will be most entirely isolated. I mean, it won't have a friend in the region.
Yeah. Well, see, I guess I didn't even realize that Morsi had come out so strongly in favor of the Syrian revolution.
Yeah, I was
just assumed that he would have to be on their side.
He would take a neutral position, but no, he really came out. I think he said the Assad regime had lost all legitimacy, and it has to go, which is quite strong, which is really quite strong language.
Well, yeah. Well, and of course, the situation in Syria is, like in Egypt, one where the Muslim Brotherhood is basically the only group that was legal at all, or actually, I don't know if it was legal, but at least it was strong enough, unofficially, that they're, like you said, in the situation in Egypt, they're the only ones prepared to take power. Same thing right now in Syria. If you just change somehow, someone just shoots Assad in the back of the head or something, then maybe it'd be different, but it seems like, what's going to take for regime changes to bring down the entire Syrian state. And then in that case, who's left to take it over but the Muslim Brotherhood? There's nobody else organized to do it.
Right, right. I know in the case of Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood was formally outlawed, but it was tolerated. And even to the extent that its people were allowed to run in parliamentary elections as long as they ran on an independent ticket, Whereas in Syria, I think they were like totally banned. I mean, I think they were arresting, they were detaining anybody who was even remotely connected to the group.
Yeah, I guess I should know more about that before I go spouting off. But my understanding was there
basically
was still second place to the state of Syria, and they were the most organized force there. But I don't know. Hey, maybe Al-Qaeda is now. Ayman al-Zawahiri here. He says all good suicide bombers go to fight for Osama bin Laden in Syria.
Well, this is another bizarre thing that's made viable Middle Eastern analysis so difficult, so problematic right now in this post-Arab Spring era. Where you now have a situation where Al-Qaeda, which is the arch enemy of America, is now sort of on the same page with the U.S. fighting against the Syrian regime or cropping up in Libya, or it's really becoming extremely confusing. It's very difficult to tell who's on whose side,
Yeah. Sometimes we're fighting for the Ayatollah Khomeini, other times we're fighting for Ayman al-Zawahiri, and then we switch back again. It's so hard to keep track.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of weird, very strange bedfellows and shifting alliances and that sort of thing that's making it extremely frustrating to read,
Yeah, one thing's for sure, none of this has to do with protecting Americans. Has the first thing to do with even protecting America's interests, no matter how broadly defined.
Right. Well, I would be hard pressed to tell.
Oh, no, your phone just went to pot on me again.
Uh-oh, okay.
We'll have to leave it there. Damn, see, because I still wanted to ask you about what Morsi had said about, well, maybe America needs to start living up to their side of the Camp David Agreement, but your phone is toast. Next time, Adam. Adam Morrow, everybody. IPSnews.net. For all the best of Adam Morrow. Sorry we lost you there. We're almost out of time. You got to go and I got to go. So We'll have to leave it there for now.
Ben Franklin said those who are willing to sacrifice essential liberty for a little temporary safety deserve neither. Hi, Scott Horton here for the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's a playing card-sized steel Bill of Rights designed to set off the metal detectors anywhere the police state goes, so you can remind those around you the freedoms we've lost. And for a limited time, get free shipping when you purchase a frequent flyer pack of 5 Bill of Rights Security Edition cards. Play a leading role in the security theater with a Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com.
Hey everybody, Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. If you're like me, then you're right all the time, surrounded by people in desperate need of correction. Well, we can't all have a radio show, but we can all get anti-government propaganda to stick on the back of our trucks. Check out LibertyStickers.com. Categories include anti-war, empire, police state, libertarian, Ron Paul, gun rights, founders quotes, and of course, the stupid election. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
This October 15th through 19th, the Future Freedom Foundation and the Young Americans for Liberty present the College Civil Liberties Tour, The War on Terrorism, Civil Liberties, and the Constitution, featuring from the left, the heroic Guardian columnist Glenn Greenwald, on the right, former Deputy Attorney General Bruce Fein, and the libertarian leadership of this new realignment, the great Jacob Hornberger, president of the Future Freedom Foundation. That's October 15th through 19th at colleges across the western U.S. Check out fff.org/collegetour.html for more details.
Hey everybody, Scott Horton here. Ever think maybe your group should hire me to give a speech? Well, maybe you should. I've got a few good ones to choose from, including how to end the war on terror, the case against war with Iran, central banking in war, Uncle Sam and the Arab Spring, the ongoing war on civil liberties, and of course, why everything in the world is Woodrow Wilson's fault. But I'm happy to talk about just about anything else you've ever heard me cover on the show as well. So check out youtube.com/Scott Horton Show for some examples, and email Scott@ScottHorton.org for more details. See you there.